The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Welcome to The Doctor Is In with me, Dr. Dinothar Archer Cartwright. I'm a family medicine specialist and consultant, and we talk every Tuesday evening on Guardian Radio, all things to do with health, wellness, and things that pertain to the Bahamian society at large. We have an interesting show tonight. I mean, every time I try to get away from, I guess, the COVID topics, there's just so much more happening. This COVID just keeps going and going and going and going. And so we're going to talk a little bit tonight about this new variant that's out there, Omicron, you know, whatever they want to call it, and kind of, you know, what's going on with that and whether we should be afraid or not, or is it just more fear mongering? So we've got some information that we're going to talk about. And then we're going to talk a little bit about COVID stress as well. I've seen a lot of people that are coming in and they're not stressed because they have COVID. They're not stressed. But they're stressed about the whole kind of situation, just the fear, the ongoing situation, and just coping with life. I mean, we talk about going back to normal, but what does that mean? And how do we all get back into a sense of peace where we can feel comfortable and live the lives that we want to live? It's something that we all need to think about. And there's a lot of psychology that comes into play. We're in a world right now where sometimes what's right is considered wrong, and truth is considered misinformation. And so we're all in a very confusing spot. We've been dealing with all of this stuff for quite some time. And I try to move on to other topics, but there's so much going on and it all relates because it's impacting our lives so much. You know, everything has to do with this kind of pandemic that's happening. And we've come to the point where, you know, today we're free, tomorrow we're locked in. You know, you just never know what's gonna happen. And so we have to pay attention. We have to pay attention to what's going on. We have to pay attention to what's happening out there. We have to pay attention to what's happening in other countries. And we have to be vigilant and we have to be intelligent about this. This copy and paste way of doing things is not always the way to go, as we can see with the controversy now of banning these African nations that came out and said, hey, we found a new variant, only to find that it's possible that this thing was in a lot of other places beforehand. So we're going to talk about all those things tonight, and I definitely want you to jump in, participate, and if you have any questions on anything else, of course, this is The Doctor Is In, we can address them, and so we're going to open up the lines for any kind of other questions that might come up. So anything that you kind of have in mind, you can pull me a little off topic tonight, because I did say I was going to come away from the whole COVID conversation quite a bit. And there's some other topics we want to look at before the Christmas season comes in. But I thought it was important that we just kind of address this before things get a little bit crazy, which they already seem to have. And so our numbers tonight on Guardian Radio are 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259. The show tonight is brought to you by Medical Concierge Services. You can find them, as well as me, Collins Avenue, the Bahamas Heart Center. We're located on the second floor, just ask for Dr. D. Archer. And, you know, we do home care services as well as medical clinical services. So anything family related, children, adults, everybody. We also provide home care services if that's needed. We do IV vitamins and a lot of other stuff. So check out the website, mcsfamilymedicine.com, for all of our services. You can find us also on Facebook, Medical Concierge Services, and Instagram, Medical_Concierge_Services. you know, it's a mouthful, but it's there. And it really has to do because a lot of part of my work is a concierge medicine, which is I do go specifically to clients and persons in need of medical services. So we can do that just about anywhere, your yacht, your boat, your home, your office. You know, we provide those. And the new service that we are also providing is our corporate care services. So if you want to bring those health checks, the health care to your office or to your personal office space, we can help you out with that too. So give us a call, 326-1521 or WhatsApp us at 429-4880. And so I'm just going to speak first because we've heard about this, I guess, in an Omicron, I guess, that's how you pronounce it, Omicron variant, which was actually found in South Africa. Really what it was is it was just sequenced or discovered there. So the doctors there were kind of looking at this increase in cases and they were wondering what it was all about. So they went and they actually sequenced and found out that there was a slightly different variant that was quite a different from the ones that we've seen so far. They made notice of it in South Africa, and this is where this all started. But as we're starting to learn, it is quite apparent that this was kind of lurking around in a lot of other places before it even arrived in Africa. But we saw that very quickly the world shut its door to these African nations in the south of Africa, and as well as Botswana and in South Africa and a lot of those that are down there. If you all remember when this first came out and it was coming out of China and everyone was like closing their doors and doing a lot of stuff, and the last president said, you know, we're going to ban China because this is where the cases are coming from. There was a whole bunch of noise being made over the situation. And very quickly, as soon as the African nations down there in the South said that, hey, we think there's a new variant around, this is what it's called, they were immediately banned. No data, no information. And it's kind of sad that we're in a time where we don't ask any questions. We just jump to do things emotionally. And science should not be that. We're in a time where people are saying that they are the science and the science is them. You know, no person is a science. Science requires ever chasing the truth. And to chase the truth, you have to ask questions. You have to study. You have to make observations. You have to try and find out what that truth is. And sometimes the truth requires you to ask a question multiple times in multiple ways. It reminds me of a study that we did on compliance. Compliance is with medication, a diabetes study that I was involved in. And compliance is, you know, how well you do what you're supposed to do. So did you take your medication? So we'd use a questionnaire, like a survey, an international survey that was approved to answer this question. And so we asked this question, but we asked it 8 times in 8 different ways. Do you take your medication? And can you believe that each one of those questions was answered slightly different? The way the question was put together was so that we can get the truth, because the truth is not always so easy to grasp. And scientists search for the truth. It requires work. It requires brain power. Requires thinking and it requires study. And so we should not jump to conclusions. We should not be doing things by emotion. That is not the scientific way, but we should be doing things for the greater good at the end of the day. And that's what really matters. I'm gonna start off with just this article because I think it puts it all into play. Because with this Omicron variant, this article is titled, "The Omicron variant was in Europe a week before South Africa reported it." Okay? It was a week. So this comes from the Dutch health authorities identified early cases of the new Omicron virus of Omicron variant of coronavirus, including one from a sample taken the week before Africa raised the alarm about the mutated variant. Other cases were found through tests in Amsterdam. All right? So the article goes on to say, and this article is coming from NPR, all right? So the national press. The Omicron variant, coronavirus variant, was already in the Netherlands a week before South Africa reported the new variant to the World Health Organization, according to a Dutch health agency. The variant was recently identified in retest of samples that were taken on November 19th and the 23rd. The National Institute of Public Health and Environment announced on Tuesday revelations about the variants existing in Europe before it was reported in Africa added a twist to questions about whether and how the variant originated, and whether travel bans on South Africa and its neighbors are an appropriate response to the variant. One thing about this pandemic, irrational behavior has become normal. From the very beginning, when we went against everything that we know about science and we know about viruses, we locked down the world. Okay, we were afraid, we weren't sure what this was. 2 weeks, remember, 2 weeks to stop the spread, to flatten the curve. My question at the time when we even said that was, to flatten the curve is not to change the trajectory or the course that the virus would be taking. It would not change mortality or morbidity. It would just stretch that out over time. And I don't think the regular guy on the street understood this, that that was not going to be a cure, but it would just be stretching out cases and time. And I think it did us a disservice in the end. And so this act of closing down and shutting down, I think is no longer appropriate. We have enough studies to tell us it just doesn't work. All right. So the South African president, Cyril Ramaphosa, says his country is being punished for detecting the variant and informing global health authorities about it. You do not try and contain a virus through imposing bans unscientifically and indiscriminately, he said on Tuesday, adding the measures such as testing all travelers are the best tools for combating the pandemic. South African officials raised the alarm about the heavily mutated variant on November the 24th. 2 days later, the WHO classified it as a variant of concern and dubbed it Omicron. The Global Health Agency says the variant poses very high risk because its mutations could help it to spread more easily and possibly affect people who might otherwise be considered immune to previous variants. That is a very interesting concept, since the only people who seem to be immune to variants are people with natural immunity, because we know that you don't get immunity the other way. All right, so that's the only thing that's holding up in terms of immunity. And so they can be possibly meeting people who already have had COVID, because those people seem to be doing very well with the variants. And the antibodies are lasting much longer than anything else, all right? You don't have to call it, we know what it is. Abnormalities prompted retesting of old samples. Links to Southern Africa are unclear. The Netherlands had previously reported more than a dozen Omicron COVID-19 cases detected in tests at an Amsterdam airport in November 26, when 624 people arrived in the country from South Africa. Dutch authorities scrutinized the older samples after the initial PCR tests found abnormalities in the coronavirus spike protein, and the Omicron variant has 26 to 32 mutations in that area alone. So this is different. Now, is this worse? And we're going to get to that, because having mutations is a way of survival for a virus. So is this something for us to be concerned about? We're going to get to that during this, because we are making a lot of noise without a lot of information. The samples were taken at a municipal public health service site. And they said it's not clear whether these people had also visited Southern Africa. So it already was in Europe. We know that it had been in Europe prior to it being announced in South Africa. I'm just wondering if we will all be banning all the European nations, as well as I believe there's Canada, Australia, quite a few places that already have this. The rapid spread of Omicron has triggered travel restrictions. As of late Monday, 33 Omicron cases have been confirmed in Europe in 8 different countries: the Netherlands, Austria, Belgium, Czech, Denmark, Germany, Italy, and Portugal, according to the European Center for Disease Control. Disease prevention and control is also being found in other places such as Hong Kong and Israel, very highly vaccinated places. The Omicron variant triggered a rush of new travel restrictions targeting South Africa. Remember, we just announced all 8 of those European countries, as well as Hong Kong and Israel, possibly Australia and Canada. But we see that for South Africa, there were restrictions put in place. So almost immediately, new bans were announced and proposed by the EU, the US, and Canada, along with Japan, Russia, and the UK. So they're banning people coming in from South Africa. And let's not remember that Africa, even South Africa, which has is one of the countries in Africa with one of the highest vaccination rates in Africa, because if we look at entire Africa, vaccination rate is probably like 2% or something like that. But in a place like South Africa, in Botswana, the rates are a lot higher for South Africa at something like 38%. So these are the most vaccinated places in Africa. They basically put the ban. And so the leader of South Africa is basically saying this is unfair, it's discriminatory, and he wants to know why, because really all they did is they applied the science. They saw something popping up, they decided to go and list it, but that doesn't mean that it originated there or that it is a problem there. Good night, Mrs. Colby. Welcome to the show. Wow, I thought it was recording. There we go. All right. So where did it originally emerge from? It's still unknown. So days after South Africa informed the WHO about the new variant, Botswana said its genomic surveillance COVID-19 had found it in cases in foreign diplomats who entered the country on November 7th. It is not clear where the variant actually emerged from. The STAT Health News site reports it could be that the South African and Botswana saw it early because they have strong genetic sequencing networks. So they have strong science. They were actually doing a lot of sequencing and they were able to detect it earlier. And this doesn't mean that it originated there. The 4 people tested on November 11th, as they prepared to leave Botswana, their samples were retested after the alarm was raised about the variant. Botswana has not identified the diplomats who said where else they had traveled. The country recently said it found an additional 15 cases, with the majority of them also linked to international travel. Right? Now, there was a letter that was circulating. I didn't have it here, but the letter pretty much was mentioning that that the health officials were saying that, you know, these were all vaccinated persons. And I think that is where a lot of people are kind of getting all up in their cells, because, you know, they were vaccinated people. But we know that vaccinated people catch COVID and they transmit COVID. So this, to me, is still, you know, this is not big news. Is this something that's worse than what we have? It doesn't seem so. So we're going to move to another article straight from one of the ministers in South Africa, the Minister of Health. What did he say? And is this something that we need to be worried about? And then we're going to play a clip from one of the health officials in South Africa to hear straight from the horse's mouth what's happening over there. So the minister, the health minister, says that South Africa has enough experience to deal with the new variant. South Africa's health minister said that there is absolutely no need to panic over the new coronavirus variant. So despite all of what you're hearing, when we look at what's coming out of South Africa, it's a very different tone, despite a surge in cases. He said, we've been here before, referring to the beta variant detected in South Africa last December. South Africa also condemned the travel bans imposed on the country, saying they should be lifted immediately. Omicron has been classified as a variant of concern. Early evidence suggests has a heightened reinfection risk. The heavily mutated variant was detected in South Africa and is responsible for most of the infections found in South Africa's most populated province of Gauteng over the last 2 weeks. The number of cases appears to be increasing in all the provinces. All right? South Africa reported 22,800 new cases on Sunday, a rise from its daily average of about 500 previously. So you can see that there was quite an increase there, and that's why specifically for South Africa, this was something for them to be concerned about from their point of view, okay? And so that's why they looked into it. The government advisor and epidemiologist Salam Abdul Karim said he expected the number of cases to reach more than 10,000 a day by the end of the week and for hospitals to come under pressure in the next 2 weeks. He wanted to reiterate that there is absolutely no need to panic because they're not in new territory. We are now more than 20 months experience in COVID-19 and various variants and waves, as he added at a media briefing. So they're taking it very kind of easily, right? So they're not freaking out. They said, we've been here before, which is kind of the approach that you should expect for your health people to be taking at this point. Because if anybody heard me earlier, earlier this year? It's very likely COVID is going to be endemic. This idea of herd immunity has all but fallen away, especially if you're taking a vaccine-only approach, all right? And so then he goes on to talk about his disappointment in the decision. Now, I think we have a clip from one of the health officials in South Africa. If we could play that first clip, Mr. Producer, that would be great. They're going to talk about how it's only mild to moderate cases, and so it shouldn't be something to be worried about.
The public needs to understand what we currently are seeing. It's very early days, and it's now more or less, I call it day 13, which since, we have made the diagnosis of these new variant that's going around. So if you look at the severity, and especially in the beginning of any wave, it's normally not that severe. It's normally the younger people that get infected. And then from there on, it will spread and go further. So hopefully we can keep the clinical picture as it is. If we say patients are not they are moderate ill. They're not severely ill. I'm also part of a group of about 8 doctors, and only two patients that admitted the past 24 hours. I'm not sure about those patients' symptoms. But the majority of what we are presenting to primary healthcare practitioners are extremely mild cases, so mild to moderate. And So these patients means they don't need to be hospitalized for now. And we try to get the message out there to the world to say, listen, we not say this is not going to be a disease going forward that's going to cause a severe disease. It will cause severe disease. But if we can get this disease, if this disease can cause to more than the majority of people mild symptoms, easily treatable at home, no need for admission. That's a first price. But for us to tell this to the world, we need to tell you what the symptoms are so that the people can understand. If I feel a bit fatigued for a day or two, something, not the fatigue that you use, this is a different type of fatigue, with a bit of a scratchy throat and a bit of a body ache and pain with a headache, we call it normally malaise. So I don't feel generally well. Go and see your doctor. And then we need to tell the doctors, you're not going to see a very sick patient sitting in front of you. Test the patient. Right. So if you can test and trace, and we can get the patients to understand that it's mild symptoms for now, but go and see a healthcare facility. Go and get yourself checked out. If you can get that message out to the world. it means that we would most probably going forward have less severe cases.
Okay, I think that's the end of the clip. So that was Dr. Angelique Coetzee, one of the first doctors in South Africa who was treating Omicron patients. And she was basically discussing that what they're seeing is very, very mild, in a few cases, moderate, no major hospitalizations and no deaths. So this may actually be a very positive thing because, as she said, it's taking over most of the cases in South Africa, and it may be even milder than what we've seen before. And so what she talked about is basically flu-like symptoms, you know, headache and malaise and fatigue and stuff like that, and to still go and see your doctor if you're having some of these symptoms. But, you know, not thinking that every mutation or every problem that you see is worsening. In fact, sometimes and in many times, even if something becomes more infective, it actually loses what we call virulence, which is its ability to make you very, very sick. And so why do most viruses do that? You know, to survive, because if you are very harmful to the host and you need the host body to live, then you're not going to last very long. So if you want to survive by being a little less aggressive towards the host, you know, that's how a lot of viruses adapt. And that's why we have things like the common cold that just won't go away. It's just kind of mild. It's there. We all know of it. We don't even really think of it like that anymore. But these are all types of viruses that have over the years kind of lessened and lessened in their strength, where they're just something that we all deal with. And the flu is kind of on that path as well, where when earlier with flus, you know, a lot of people died, and people still die of the flu, except for 2020, I guess. But what we're seeing may not actually be a negative thing, but a positive progression that's happening in terms of what we're seeing here. And so, should we be so fearful? It's possible that this might be an actual turning point for this virus. And so let's hope. I think we need to start taking a more positive approach. There's a lot of gloom and doom. People are racing to close back up, they're racing to put more restrictions on. And you have to start to wonder at this point, why is that? Why are you doing it? You know, what is the reasoning behind it? And I think everybody was open to all of this earlier on. And as we're moving forward, you know, we're starting to get less inclined to that. So we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back and talk a little bit more about this. And then we're going to talk a little bit about this COVID fatigue and how do we get out of this. So we'll be back in a moment with me, Dr. D, on The Doctor's End.
COVID-19 doesn't take holidays off, and neither should you. We can celebrate the holiday season while continuing to follow all public health protocols and regulations. We must also remember to wash our hands and sanitize frequently. Wear our masks, cough and sneeze into our elbows, disinfect items brought into our homes, stay at least 3 feet away from others in public, and remain at home when we're feeling unwell. Let's have a happy and healthy holiday.
This message brought to you by Bahamas Ministry of Health in conjunction with Guardian Radio.
In a year when hugs and happy smiles have been few and far between, Fresh Market knows just how important this holiday season is to everyone. We've made our list, we've checked them twice, all to ensure that your holiday meals are filled with fresh and delicious ingredients. Our produce departments are brimming with seasonal favorites. Our delis and bakeries are filled with holiday sweets and treats. And our grocery aisles are stocked with all your favorite essentials. It's the best time of the year, and we're giving you fresh for the holidays.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
Thank you.
Hello, good afternoon, and welcome back to the Doctor's Inn with me, Dr. Denothra Archer-Cartwright. Tonight brought to you by Medical Concierge Services. You can reach us 326-1521-429-4880 for all your medical health needs, from children to adults, everything you need. All right, we're talking tonight about Omicron variant, and what does that mean for us, and how should we look at this situation, and how should we be dealing with it right now? And we're going to talk also about relieving some of that stress related to all of this COVID stuff. You can join in on the conversation, 322-6232-325-4316, 325-4259. And so we're just going to recap what we got in terms of the implications of what is happening. And what we saw, we just listened to a doctor from South Africa basically explain that it was very, very kind of mild symptoms that she was seeing, a very mild symptomatology. And she didn't think that it would become a problem, but it would actually be probably a good thing that you would have this kind of milder virus that kind of moves through and doesn't cause the type of hospitalization that we're seeing with the current COVID, COVID variants that we're seeing. And so that's definitely something that we should look at. And so basically the symptoms were linked to being extremely mild by the South African doctor, who was one of the first doctors to raise the alarm. She said she was only seeing mild symptoms, extremely mild symptoms. The WHO has said it will take weeks to understand how the variant may affect diagnostics, therapeutics, and vaccines. And so they're looking at that play on how that relates, because as new variants come out, you understand that the way that they make the vaccine is specific towards the original strains. And so it will take time to see if they have any effectiveness at all. So the COVID symptoms linked to the new Omicron variant have been described as extremely mild. She said that some people presented with unusual symptoms that were slightly different from those associated with the Delta variant, which is the most virulent strain of the virus to date. And we were told, you know, Delta was really, really, really going to be really bad. And we had a really crazy wave in August, but we didn't do a lot of testing. We assumed that, you know, eventually we assumed that some of that was Delta, but it's very hard to tell. This actually said that it started with a male patient who was around the age of 33. It said to me to be extremely tired for the past few days. He got body aches, pains, and a bit of a headache. And I think she mentioned younger patients, which is also a sign that the disease process is going to be mild, because just being in that age bracket, they tend not to have severe COVID. The patient didn't have a sore throat, she said, but was more of a scratchy throat. He had no cough, no loss of taste or smell, symptoms that were associated with previous strains of coronavirus. So none of that loss of smell and loss of taste that we hear about is sounding a lot more just like a mild flu-like symptoms. She went on to say she tested the male patient for COVID and he was positive, as was his family. And then she said she saw more patients that day presenting in the same kind of symptoms that differed from the Delta variant. This prompted her to raise the alarm with South African Vaccine Advisory Committee, of which she is a member. Other patients, Kotzia, had seen so far with the Omicron variant had also experienced what she described as extremely mild symptoms. And she added that her colleagues had noted similar cases. What we were seeing clinically in South Africa, and remember, I am the epicenter of this where she was practicing, is extremely mild for us, mild cases. So they are used to seeing very sick patients. So they this is why they're saying they're very used to dealing with this. And I think we have been seeing very sick patients as well. They haven't admitted anyone, and she's spoken to her other colleagues and they gave the same picture. So no one was actually admitted to hospital. So I think if we weren't doing all this testing, this would have just gone by as just more flu-like illness, and we would not have noticed possibly at all And I'm sure if you tested, you're going to find a lot of other strains and mutations. So the investigation is ongoing. The WHO has said it will take weeks to understand. Her observations are based on a very small number of patients. And that's why some experts are worried, but so good so far. The data suggests that the variant is spreading in South Africa more rapidly than previous strains did. And this is, even though she said, you know, this is where it actually becomes a positive, because if you have a milder strain of something that's spreading, then you actually have less concerns. And so it would take a while to fully kind of understand that. You have to realize that the virus has somewhat changed over the time. The original infection was called Alpha. We've had Delta since then. We've had multiple sub-strains that have happened, multiple other variants that have happened throughout the time. So it's always evolving, and that's, like we said, that's what a virus does. The CDC highlighted that the variety of COVID symptoms that have been reported, knowing anyone can have a mild to severe symptom, it may appear 2 to 14 days after exposure. So, and of course, the list of symptoms include fever, chills, cough, fatigue, shortness of breath, difficulty breathing, muscle, body aches, headaches, new loss of taste and smell and sore throat, congestion, runny nose, nausea, vomiting, and diarrhea. And up until now, we would consider a lot of that a flu-like illness. All right. The article also goes on to discuss if we should panic. And it actually slammed the actions. So the swath of countries, and this is CNBC, which is a very liberal kind of pro-draconian stuff, but they slammed it as a knee-jerk draconian reaction by the South African minister, described it as a knee-jerk draconian action. So very kind of, you know, let's just do this, not any information at all. And it's turning out that this may actually be milder. It's turning out this may already be in multiple different countries, and this may not be something to worry about. And we, as an international destination that deals with a lot of tourists, I'm sure if we were to test, we would find it. I think I saw some report about it being here. I don't know how that's possible when I know that our testing has to go outside of the country, but I'm not sure if that report is correct. But if it is, it's packing up to be a very mild illness, and it might actually be a good thing. And so no one, these other countries like US, UK, Israel, and EA, which were all kind of panicking unnecessarily, they really need to kind of wait and see what's going on. And the fact is, it's already in a lot of these countries. Everybody knows the American border, the southern border is almost completely open. I believe I saw reports where it's already in Canada. Their border is open to the Canadians. And so it's very likely that this thing has already been out there, and this is just the first sequencing of it all. I think the end of what they said there is that if you think already have it in their country without even knowing it, so I would say that at this stage, definitely 2 weeks on, maybe we'll be able to say something different. So everyone needs to take account and look. And it's going to be extremely embarrassing to know that everyone jumped on the wagon to kind of ban these African countries that made the statement without kind of finding out any information at all, and the possibility that it is already in their own country. So that was kind of where that is. So I think from this side, it doesn't seem to be something that we need to stress about. We're going to have multiple variants of a virus, especially when it's pressured, as it's being pressured to survive. And so we have to just continue to be vigilant and, you know, to wash your hands. I think what we found is that out of all the crazy stuff that we've done, the very basic things of just kind of washing your hands and keeping up your hygiene, keeping your health in control are the key things to getting through all of this. And so I don't think that we need to panic. I'm sure that we're going to have to revisit our own banning that we did. It was very, very quick. I was extremely shocked. I don't know how many tourists or trips or people that we have coming in from the South African countries, but we were very slow in the beginning of the pandemic to ban a lot of the European countries as well as United States, even when height of the pandemic, We were very slow to do those things. And that's when we totally did not know anything about it. So I think it was really kind of rash. And it shows that as a country, we need to start thinking for ourselves. We need more investigation on our side. We need more insight. We need a more scientific approach to all of this. All right? And that is what we need to do. And so I think it was very a rash decision. We're finding out that it's probably going to be a very mild illness. And hopefully that's where this entire thing is going. Because that, to me, is the key out of the pandemic. The virus will have to go through its natural course and burn itself out and become a very mild illness. Because it is already a very mild illness for many people, but there are a group of people that don't do well with COVID. But for the majority of people, 99.6%, they're going to come out of this, they're going to survive. The other part of what I wanted to talk about tonight was kind of some of the mental health and kind of stress that this whole thing is bringing on. So a lot of people, just in discussion, a lot of people are just tired and a lot of people are completely stressed out. Just thinking about this all the time, being a part of our lives, not being sure. People have gotten extremely burnt out. There's a lot of things that are coming out about the mental health, the substance abuse, and a lot of other mental health issues that people have been going with and dealing with when it comes to COVID. I call it COVID stress, almost in a sense, because stress can be something that is damaging to your overall health. You know, it's one of those things. So we have to manage that stress in order to get through. So I saw a lot of different articles on how to manage your stress during this ongoing pandemic. And what a lot of studies found was there are multiple areas that created stress for persons during COVID. You know, there's economic stress. There's people having stress on the job. There's relational stress. There is isolation from all the previous lockdowns. So a lot of people are having a lot of fear, a lot of anxiety amid ongoing pandemic. And so the key thing to know is you're not alone. A lot of people are feeling this. A lot of people are not doing well with the masking and the social isolation. And we have to start looking at how this is affecting the society, how this is affecting our children, and how we gonna make up for all of this. Because we have a generation of children that are growing up with a mask on their face, who are afraid of each other, who don't get a chance to play and have the social dynamic that we all wish they would, which we know is important to the development of the human mind, body, and soul. And so there are a lot of common causes of stress during coronavirus pandemic. Uncertainty, lack of routine, reduced social support, and many others. As humans, we don't like uncertainty and tend to thrive in routine. Routines are essential because they create a sense of normalcy and control in our lives. This sense of control then allows us to manage the challenges that come our way. When we don't have a routine, much of our time is spent trying to establish one. And without a routine, we often pay attention to the things that are most flashy when the big news happens. And I think we've all been entranced by this. There always seems to be another big thing. So our routine has been severely disrupted, and the routine of everyone around us. And usually when something goes wrong in our lives, we can usually kind of rely on other persons for a sense of calm. And I've always said that we've kind of lacked this sense of calm in the midst of all of this. We've all been experiencing the same sense of uncertainty. We've all been realizing that, you know, at a certain point, nobody really knew what was going on. And so stress affects your health. So stress management is extremely important in this time. And it's just an essential thing for good physical health. It is very important that we address our stress and how it affects our health. We usually are able to deal with short-term pressures and normal stresses. And it usually helps us to change in a positive way. You know, they say a little pressure creates diamonds. But chronic stress can cause huge deteriorations in our quality of life. And this can happen on a mental and a physical level. When we're more pessimistic, when we're depressed or anxious, our immune systems go down and produce more stress hormones, reducing our immunity and increasing inflammation. Stress can also put a strain on our mental health, relationships, and our productivity. And I think that's what we saw a lot of. We saw a really bad situation made so stressful that it even affected people's health. And so what can we do? What can we do to relieve some of that stress? And this is part of the process of getting back to normal. Sorry, we have a caller. Caller, you're on the air. Sorry, I didn't see it. Caller, are you there? Caller, are you there?
Oh, please hang up and try again.
I'm sorry, caller. If you can call back, that would be great. I did kind of miss that. I'm not too sure how long you were hanging on there. Caller, are you back?
Hey, how you doing, Doc?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm good, Dr. Acha. It's good to hear your voice once again. This is Black Male. I called you last week. That's M-A-L-E now, not M-A-I-L. I'm Black and I'm a male.
Okay, I was just wondering now.
Yeah, not M-A-I-L, M-A-L-E. Okay. Like I told you last week, I believe this is the most interesting topic of our time, and especially right now. And I'm so glad that you never really left it. Even because this new variant came out, as it relates to stress, the Bible teaches that the love of money is the root of all evil, right? And I would say that this was a plandemic and not a pandemic. Let me explain. In 2016, Dr. Peter Daszak from the Echo Health Alliance, you should know him, he's a zoologist out of Britain. They held a forum at the National Academy of Science. I'm quoting him, until an infectious disease crisis is really real present and at an emergency threshold, it's often largely ignored. To sustain the funding base beyond the crisis, we need to increase public understanding of the need for medical countermeasures such as a pan-influenza or a pan-coronavirus vaccine. Watch this, Doc. A key driver is the media, and the economics will follow the hype. We need to use that hype to our advantage to get to the real issue. Investors will respond if they see profit at the end of the process, end quote. This was said by Dr. Peter Daszak in 2016. So, breaking this down simply, we're going to produce a virus. We're going to hype it up. The hype is going to cause hysteria. Hysteria is going to allow companies like Pfizer, Moderna, right, to get on board, to make a vaccine, to make big profits. And it's so interesting, right, that if you notice most nightly news now, Pfizer is the co-sponsor. They're actually sponsoring, they're the sponsor for most major news networks now. And I believe that that was put in place so that there cannot be any resistance against the vaccine or what they're trying to do. Because, you know, if you are my benefactor, I find it very difficult to speak out against you. Another thing, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation has donated $318 million to the mainstream media. $318 million. CNN got about 3.6 million, and I think MSNBC got about 13 million out of that money. No wonder why everyone is on the same drumbeat, and no one wants to speak out against what is actually happening. This actually a setup. And like you said, you know, Pfizer is making, correct me if I'm wrong, $1,000 a second?
That's what I said. So last year they made $41.9 billion in revenue, right? So far this year, they've taken in another $36 billion in revenue. Billion with a B, right? This is one company taking in.
So, Doc, why stop the party?
Well, if you take it, they will give it to you. That's what I told someone.
I mean, it's amazing, right? Now, you probably mentioned, because I just actually, someone turned me on to you. I'm so glad they did. Now they want to put it in our children's which already start in San Francisco, 5 to 11-year-old, right? Mm-hmm. Here's what the FDA said. You might have even mentioned this. A board member of the FDA, Eric Rubin, how are we going to know how effective the vaccines are if we don't try them in the children first? You heard that statement?
It's absolute madness. But here we are in this country following the world as well. And nobody wants to talk about it. Nobody's allowed to talk about it. And this is why I started off the show with the fact that real scientists ask questions. Real scientists want to know why, how, when, how long.
Because the science has not been settled. But according to them, the science is settled. I heard Dr. Fauci said the other night that he is science.
Yeah, that's a very scary thing. I mentioned that too earlier on.
Okay.
This is moving almost into a religious kind of feeling.
A cult.
So one man can't be science, and definitely not a man who's usually quite wrong.
Right.
He has not been correct on anything other than the fact that they will be pushing certain things on you over a period of time.
Listen, Dr. Archer, I always ask people the question, what has this vaccine done, you know? And a lot of people take exception to what I say, but here's one thing I'm sticking with, right? I understand the data where they say that it causes you not to die. But see, only God has that record of who is going to die.
There's a lot of questions about Pfizer's data that's coming up. You know, there were whistleblowers and different stuff like that about them not, being very responsive to people who had side effects and other problems and whatever like that. The way that this was tested in this manner is why I've had a kind of a cautious approach. And so if people want to get vaccinated, I have no problem. I just don't like the idea of mandating anything that you're not sure of. I don't think you should mandate anything, of course, or push anyone to do anything that they don't want to do. But the unsurety, you know, and the unsurety is so clear, you know, the facts aren't concrete. The safety profiles are not completed. The long-term side effects are unknown. I mean, it's very uncomfortable for me, especially when you start talking about children. Looking at how minimal data was used to make these decisions. I think it was the JCVI in the UK that actually said no to giving it to kids.
Exactly.
The government overruled them and said for the mental health of children. So they're using it almost as a pacifier. Hey, we gave you something to make you feel reassured. And then we're seeing restrictions coming out now to reassure those who were vaccinated because we cannot guarantee you what we told you that we would guarantee you. So therefore, we have to come down on the unvaccinated to make you feel like you made the right choice. I don't like that approach to medicine. There's no science in that.
Doc, well, I agree with you. Let's just look to the north. The FDA is supposed to have been the advisory board for the CDC. The FDA went against the booster shot. That's why Gruber, Philip Krause and Marion Gruber, the director and deputy director, stepped down, right? They voted 16-2 against the booster shot. But yet Walensky from the CDC override that. You override what the advisory board say and come to find out The Moderna test, I think they only said they tested 188 people for the boost. Sorry, 198. And Pfizer only tested about 200 for the booster shot. And yet,
they're getting away with stuff that, you know. And the other problem I had is like medications that have been around for a very long time. They want this high level of study done to prove that you can use something that you've been using for years. But stuff that people are just, you know, these companies are just popping up with.
Yes.
They're passing them right away. They're giving them emergency use authorization, which basically means that we're not sure, but since there's nothing else, we'll let you use this. But, so I don't know. It's kind of a double standard to me.
Well, ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, but here's the irony in this. Okay, here's the irony in this. They're monoclonal antibodies, right? And Florida's doing quite well. Florida's doing quite well as it relates to that. Here's the irony in this. How could you mandate or force me to take something when it addresses a 1986 law and then in 2005, George W. Bush, the son, where they implemented the law that Big Pharma cannot be sued, right, when they bring out a product for the Emergency Act. That's what Pfizer, Moderna, Johnson & Johnson went to Congress and they implemented that, right? So even if you have an adverse side effect, there's no recourse, but they still expect you to take this. And you know, Doc, I always point to there's something that Pfizer just pulled off the shelf for smokers. There's a product they just pulled off the shelf for smokers that they used to be advertising. It was on the market for 15 years, and it caused, they found out now that it caused cancer. And they just pulled it off the shelf about 2 or 3 months ago. What they use for smokers. But that the point I'm trying to make is that this product was on the market for 15 years.
Mm.
And 15 years later, it's now pulled off the shelf. All right?
And that's why there can't be a worship of any sort of science because, you know, things are ever changing. As you develop and you get more information, you're supposed to take that information and make better decisions. You can't be static in your motion if you truly believe in evidence-based work.
Yes, that's correct.
If you get new evidence, you now take that evidence and you make a different decision based on that. But to be stuck in one particular way of thinking despite everything that's before you, to me, is very moronic in the sense. And it shows that we've moved far away from science to more a pseudo-intellectual conversation about, somebody's ego or agenda.
Well, Doc, let me just congratulate you because, you know, what amazes me in this town, I mean, you but the only doctor speaking out against this, and I know you have colleagues, right? And it amazes me that you can't, I don't know if they support you behind closed doors, but in public, it's amazing that you can't get calls on this topic from well-renowned doctors and people who actually know the truth. You know what the Bible speaks about saying the truth? Whenever you know the truth and you don't warn your brother, you're complicit. He that knoweth to do good and doeth it not to him, it is sin. So you don't necessarily have to pull the trigger. But if you don't warn someone, don't worry, they're
listening. They tell me.
Yeah, but you have courage. And, you know, I really appreciate you. And I just want to thank you.
This is the world that we live in. And, you know, I was brought up in a system where we were supposed to seek the truth. And we're supposed to do what's right. And we should be able to have difference of opinions. When we're in a world where we can't have a difference of opinion, we are lost.
Yeah, that's tyranny. That's communism.
Right? Because it's difference of opinions that allow us to discuss something and find a common ground and be able to find out even more information because there's something that you don't know that I might know. There's something that I might know that you don't know. And in that discussion, and I think we are very fearful of having a different opinion in this country and in many other places.
But, Doc,
I don't know why that's become a taboo thing.
But as it relates to the COVID-19 situation, I don't even think it should be a difference of opinion because the facts are there. Basically, like you say, 99.6% of the people, this really don't affect at all. This really is an endemic, right, for either people who have more morbid obesity, probably stage 1 diabetes, probably who have non-communicable diseases, right? and who are immunocompromised. So it's really an endemic. It isn't a pandemic that really threatens the whole world. Not at that percentage number, 99%.
I called it that. I called it an endemic on Dwight's show, and he thought that was controversial. You know, so I'm like, it's very clear that we are leading to an endemic situation.
That's what it is.
There's no other path, and we can resist, and we can do whatever we want to do. I've never seen human beings able to conquer nature in that way.
Well, viruses lived with avian species, right, and bats for centuries. We coexisted, right, and because of our innate immune system that God gives us, you know, we tend to survive and we always come out. And this thing about, we understand the 3 to 6 months as related to the vaccine efficacy. And back to what I was saying, that's why when they start to mention that, oh, but it stops you from dying. Man, only God knows when you could die, right? Someone could get a gunshot an inch away from his heart and live. The other individual could be shot in his leg, right?
What's interesting is nothing has ever been sold that way. You know, very few things are sold in that manner. It's very, very interesting way of going about something.
Doc, my argument against that is that they, from Jump Street, they never tested people for the antibodies. So what actually happened? We knew before the vaccine even came out, there was a 99% survival rate, right? Mm-hmm. So what they were doing, Doc, they were vaccinating healthy people. People that would have never died from the virus was receiving the jab. Now they want to say that it's the jab that's keeping them alive, when in fact it's your innate immune system. Because 99% of the people would have never died anyhow, Doc. So they're giving healthy people a jab, and now they want to give the vaccine the glory. This is why the efficacy rate, right, in terms of the infection cannot stand. Because it has nothing to do with the vaccine. It has to do with your innate immune system. So I always stood with that from this place came out, you know. I followed the data. And just like I'm speaking with you, I can hold a conversation with any doctor because all of us started COVID-19 in 2019 the same time. And the data, when it comes to the data, it's like I'm offering you a car and you have a car right outside. Or your car, it takes about 3 gallons of gas to carry you from there to the airport. Inside your car right now, you have about 3 gallons of gas. So we know that you would make it from there to the airport. I come in turn, give you an extra gallon of gas, and you reach the airport, and I say, listen, man, because I give you this extra gallon of gas, this is why you made it to the airport. When in fact, you would have made it to the airport without my extra gallon of gas. And this is what the vaccine, the jab is, right? It's stealing copyrights from God's innate immune system. It's trying to take the glory from God's innate immune system. That's my view on that.
Okay, they're saying that it was there was quite a bit of static. So, oh boy, I kind of ended that. I'm sorry. I kind of ended the live broadcast by mistake. They said there was a lot of static. And so I am just trying to get that. Hopefully this will be a lot better. Thank you, caller. I think, you know, you made a lot of extremely important points that we talked about. And I think, you know, we at this point, we need to start having these types of discussions. We should have been having them already. In terms of colleagues, you know, I think everybody's battling this in different ways. I tend to be a little bit more outspoken. I think it's important to have different points of views out there. And I think if we continue with such a narrow-minded way of dealing with these, then it's going to be problematic. I'm glad to see that the country opened up quite a bit and that a lot of people are getting back to work. And I think that's what we need to focus on. We need to focus on getting the country back to normal and not this weird sense of normal that you hear talk about. So I hope that this is a lot clearer than it was before. I think it's a new case on the phone. I'm not sure, but hopefully it is a lot clearer. So 322-6232-325-4316, 325-4259. So before the caller came in, we were talking about coping with all of this COVID stress and everything that is kind of happening. We kind of had our wits end. I'm kind of over it. I'd like to see this all over and done. I'm glad to see that our numbers in the last few weeks have been pretty good. So hopefully we are turning a corner and perhaps having a variant that is very mild is actually a good thing. So I'd like to take a positive outlook on this and look to see some of the findings as they start to come out. So just some stress reduction tips to get you through all of this. And I would say the first thing to do is just to take a deep breath, you know, and just inhale and in and out, just let it all out and just relax and clear your mind. It's very, very important that we have a clear sense of this. And this is not the only thing, that we are focused on. So I say get back to having a morning routine. When you're stuck at home, it can be very tempting to just basically just lie about, you know? But as we're getting back into things, get back into your morning routine. Consider waking up, doing your exercises, showering, meditating, journaling, whatever brings you kind of peace, tidying your home, having a healthy breakfast. Get back into your morning routine or ritual. And I think we all went into that slump. We all went into that, you know, we're just gonna, you know, we let everything kind of go a little bit and didn't worry about a lot of stuff. And I even had to myself kind of pull back and say, let me get back into some of my old routines, just kind of doing things that I know are gonna move my life forward. And just get back into that and just having a kind of morning motivational. So now in the morning, I usually would just kind of get up and, you know, go online or do different things. And then, of course, I spend a lot of time with my new son. But I started doing a lot more listening to some motivational kind of speeches and stuff in the morning just to get me going and back centered on track with business and just moving things forward and kind of planning for the new year. And so by focusing on those things, I'm able to relieve some of that stress. Checking in with our loved ones regularly, staying in touch with our family and friends can help reduce stress. So, you know, get back out there, call your friend, haven't seen for a while, you know, get out and see somebody. Just, you know, check on those people, because sometimes just you checking on another person provides so much for that person. You don't know where they are, what they're going through. Some people just need that connection. So it's good for you. It's good for others, and that's what we should do. Caller, you're on the air.
Yes, good night, Dr. D.
Hi, how you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing great. You know, I was in the shop working. I had a great time listening to the gentleman. So you have another friend, and he's right on point. And so, you know, everything that he said, I've said before, and he's totally correct, even about the subterfuge, you know. But the thing is, Dr. D, there's so much to be said. I gladly have some help, right? I like to get in contact with him, you know, because when you look at the whole chronology of this problem, right? And you can authenticate it and document it. There's nothing so hurtful as when you're being ridiculed and looked at as a fool. You know, I don't want to get personal with Dwight, right? But, you know, the conversation of herd immunity is sickening to me. Dr. D, I was one of the first person I hear on Guardian saying herd immunity was impossible because I knew of antigenic shift drift and reassortment of the influenza segmented viruses, right? I've said that, Dr. D. I don't need anybody to give me credit. But what I'm saying is, we must realize that herd immunity is a fleeting illusion. I've said that in order for herd immunity to be established.
I don't think that herd immunity is an illusion. I just think the path that they're taking to herd immunity is a problem.
Yeah, listen to me.
So if we were all, if we were to all get COVID naturally, that would be our best chance of herd immunity.
Yeah.
But by the way they're going about it with a leaky medication, such as the one that they're pushing, it's not possible.
Thing is, with herd immunity, transmission still will occur amongst those who don't have it, right? But it'll be less severe. So herd immunity is calculated by using data. The threshold will be determined by the R naught, the transmissibility rate. So it's not just what somebody thinks. And so You know, I'm glad you brought up stress. Stress leads to an unfolding protein response, and we know that. And so the way our protein folds determines what their functions are. And so one thing I wanted the people to bear in mind who's plaguing me, the gain-of-function research, most people don't understand it. You know exactly what it is. But Dr. D, tell me if I'm incorrect. In order to get the government to fund the gain-of-function research, you have to have already done research of gain-of-function in order to dedicate your research for them to fund you. So the fact that Dr. Fauci, when I asked the question last week about Dr. Fauci, said out of his own mouth on his own video that asymptomatics do not drive infections and drive pandemics. But yet still, at that time, they locked down the whole world on the guys, like the previous caller said, on asymptomatic conditions and vaccinating asymptomatics, even though asymptomatics are 80 or 85% unlikely to transmit the virus because they are not symptomatic, coughing, sneezing, runny nose, etc. So, you know, when you look at the non-scientific foolishness that's going on and the lack of consensus, right, even let's look at even the politics. As far as the student with the lab leak, with the original outbreak of the SARS-CoV-1, a student who worked in the lab got infected in the lab, went out to the hospital, and he denied that he had it, went home, and then subsequently had to come back. And so he actually admitted that he got it during a breach in the lab, which they're supposed to report that because the labs are regulated the bio for safety level, hazard or whatever, right? And so the fact that Dr. Fauci said of his own mouth, a lab leak is impossible, is non-scientific, Dr. D, right or wrong?
I'll reserve my feelings about that
But Dr. D, one can go online and Google and check lab leaks in the past.
Because anyone with common sense knows that a lot of the stuff that he says is, Dr. D, what I'm saying is
you can go online and see lab leaks, and you could authenticate it right off the CDC website.
So well, you know, he's linked to that particular thing. So I think it's, you know, it's almost kind of, you know, you're asking someone who, if that was to be the truth, he would actually be implicated about
the
situation.
I don't want to dwell on any individual because the time is high. But Dr. D, what I'm saying is as far as the innate immune system, right? We know that the dendritic cells link that. Now, here's where the problem lies at. The epitopes, right? Which is the chemical makeup of that comes of the antigens or pathogens, right? And the site that they cling is called paratopes. Now, what happens is, you have to remember that the phenotype and the genotype, as far as the immune system, because they're breeding the failure, the phenotype will be the lookalike. The body will always recognize the spike protein, whether it's innate, whether it's from a viral vector or mRNA technology. It will still recognize the spike protein and the response likewise. Now, the spike protein is, as a panoramic view now, starting to come in. The spike protein is being shown to cause endothelial damage as they move to the blood vessels. There's so much science coming into what they're doing wrong, even as voices as injecting in the blood, voices the intramuscular is showing to create other adverse effects. Of course, they have all kind of evidence showing that the spike proteins as it move, how long does it continue to make the spike protein?
Bring it all together, 52. Bring it all together.
Dr. D, it's hard to bring it all together, but you know, I know what's coming, and the fact that people are focusing on me. It's not me who's driving global policies and making their lives miserable.
Why is it that black people
focus on one another so much?
52, I want you to look up Dr. Malone's discussion on the psychology.
Yes, and he's very bright, and I'd like for you to discuss the furin gene cleavage, because by them manipulating, see, Dr. D, by them controlling the furin gene cleavage, and the furin gene is the glycoprotein that controls and encodes and deactivation and deactivation of proteins. Hence, that means those proteins are just viruses, which is the protein sequences, ATCGU. Come on, man, Dr. D.
Well, thank you, 52. You always get in depth in everything. I'm hoping everyone kind of follows you. But he was talking really about the science of how all of this mRNA vaccination works. And, you know, this novel idea of producing your body, producing the actual stuff that makes you ill and not helping you to have a continued response. And as we can see, efficacy dropping, that concept is, it's experimental in the sense. And it may not be the best approach. We'll find out later on. So we have to look at further data. But a lot of things are being ignored because I think, and I think it was Dr. Malone who actually said it, or one of these other doctors who said, you know, we are on a train that's going at full speed and nobody wants to press the brake. That's basically where we are. But we have to be brave and we have to have courage to know when we need to do something different. I think that's extremely important. And everything that 52 is just trying to say is that he's seeing a lot of data out there. He's seeing a lot of information and he's not seeing the kind of reaction to that information, which makes sense. I think we've been seeing this entire time. Why aren't we seeing a different approach to the multitude of data, study, and information that says maybe we need to look at this a little bit differently? And I think that's where the calmer heads have to prevail. Let's not get into this craziness. We see what's happening in the rest of the world. People are fighting for their rights. And a lot of this stuff is becoming nonsensical. We have to get back to common sense. We have to get back to real science. And we have to not allow pseudoscience to become a religion of emotions. All right? So certain people are trying to become deities. The only God that I worship is the God in heaven. And science is a tool to make our lives better, to seek information, and that's what it should be used for. So we're gonna try to cover in these last few minutes just some of our stress relievers that are gonna be extremely important whilst dealing with this pandemic time and what is gonna become an endemic, I feel. And the next one is to consider ways to help other people. And you may say, how is that calming? I think by helping others, you tend to be able to help yourself. This can include helping an elderly neighbor to pick up groceries. That's something I did early in the pandemic. I was doing a lot of the calls for the hotline. I was working like late in the night and weird hours. And so I had some daytime. And so we went out and we gave groceries to the elderly because we didn't want to see them in the long lines. And so we can continue with this charity to others by doing something good for others. We know a lot of people had a very hard time financially in the pandemic. And so we want to donate to our local charities. We want to purchase things for persons who we know might be in need. And it can be simple things. You know, some people can't afford to go out for a meal, you know, and if you can afford it, it's something that you can do. These are kind things that you can do to others and help to reduce your stress in the meantime. It gives you a greater sense of worth and self-well-being. You talked about having the daily self-care routine, well, a little bit more on just taking care of yourself. So going back to doing the routine things that were good for you, including exercise, meditation, walking outside. I think we have really detracted from being outside. It was so much during last year, having to stay inside. So going outside, very important. Reading, taking a bubble bath, painting, journaling, all of those things. Limit news and media consumption. So sometimes, you know, because I read a lot, I'm on social media quite a bit, and I realize I have to limit the time. And I had a very interesting conversation with a lady who was very, very stressed out. And she was just watching a lot of social media. She was just taking in a lot of information. She was very frustrated, just like me too. And, you know, I told her it is a time that maybe you need to step back from some of that and limit how much news you're taking in and some of the media. There was an article a long time back that talked about watching the news, cutting years off of your life, because it's usually a lot of negative stuff that's there to get you all hyped up. And sometimes it's just not worth it. So maybe we need to stop constantly checking our news feeds, take some time where we say, you know what, we're gonna put away the social media, we're gonna not watch the news, we're not gonna do those things, and do something else, one of those other things that are really gonna be good for you. So you have to set those boundaries around a lot of toxic things that might be going around. And sometimes you just need a break. So social distancing on social media. There's a lot of people that I even stop commenting on their pages because it would bring negativity. It would bring, you know, a lot of angst And it was sometimes even very confrontational. You know, some people have gotten so hyped up about this, they can't have a proper conversation with another person without it becoming something extremely extreme. And if we can't have a common and decent conversation about something, then I don't need to engage. So I had to learn that too. Sometimes trying to be helpful, you want to tell people certain things, but sometimes some people, you just got to leave them alone. Meditation or prayer. Some people prefer meditation. I like a bit of prayer. I like to try to speak to God at least, and give him my part and kind of lay some of my burdens on him, because I do take on a lot of things sometimes. And I know most of us out there sometimes take on a lot more things than we can retrieve. So meditation or prayer can restore your sense of control. As you focus on your breathing and your positive words or phrases, meditation can help you activate your parasympathetic nervous system. And this is an antidote for fear, right? So we're using our own bodies to just relieve the stress and fear. And this is a better way to do things, because some people, you know, they want anxiety medication and stuff like that. I say, you know, finding these ways of being calm and centering yourself is a lot better than getting, you know, stuck on some type of medication for anxiety or anything else. So when you are centered, you're able to create a calm reality around yourself. So meditation, and for those who are more spiritually guided, you know, prayer or just quiet time to find your center. Encouraging others, that can also be really good. Often when we are scared, it can be tempting to negative messages, but actively encouraging family members and friends is really important. Sometimes I find that some people just need an encouraging word. That might be the key thing that just changes their entire day and just makes that day better and just brightens it up. And, you know, I find too, people who are stressed out about certain situations with COVID, when they find that other people are thinking about these things and we have a commonality in the sense they seem to feel a lot better. And so encourage others, you know, whatever is going on, whether they're having a hard time, you know, encourage them to pick themselves up, whether it be financially or physically or whatever it may be. A kind word can go very, very far. It's important to realize we are not victims. We are helping to create an environment and change it for the better. By sending positive messages out into the world, we will not only affect those around you, but those words will come back to you. So anytime you send a positive message out into the world, you tend to get positivity back. And so we can do something kind to another person, we tend to get kindness back. And people don't understand how these psychological things are related to our health. And so during this time, it's just important to remember that eventually this will all go away. That it'll all pass. And we'll all look back on this time with, you know, wow, you know, that we went through it all. Because things always seem worse in the midst, but there's light at the end of the tunnel. And we will not get through this through divisiveness, but by unity and working together. So reach out to a neighbor, reach out to a friend, make sure they're okay. Give them a positive word and bring positivity back into your life. Because with all that's happening, it's easy to get divided. It's easy to fall into depression. And so reach out if you too are feeling that way and you think you need help. Reach out to your medical provider or someone close to you. I guess the producer's telling me that this is the end of the show. We only got about 2 more minutes. But I want to thank you for joining with me tonight on The Doctor's In with me, Dr. Dinothra Archer. We're here every Tuesday on Guardian Radio, brought to you by Medical Concierge Services. And I'll see you next week. Have a good night.
This program is a rebroadcast of a previously aired program. This is